Hi everyone, welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Laurie McGinley. Today we're joined by Jenny Swarbrick. How are you, Jenny?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
Can you just tell the listeners about your background with yourself?
Yeah, sure. So this year I've actually come up to my 20th year of coaching, which makes me feel quite old. So having started coaching whilst I was at school, I had a bit of a playing background, but nothing too major. And what I found whilst I was playing, I started looking at the game a lot more from a coach's eye, and seeing that, like, the way I was going to training sessions, I was finding I was getting frustrated, thinking that I would do things a little bit different. And then that's where it got me thinking, well, maybe I should step away from playing now and fully go into coaching, because at that point I was just doing a lot of casual coaching alongside my playing days, but I needed to take it a little bit more serious, and I was very fortunate to get a role at the FA in the FA Skills Programme, where I spent 10 years working in the FA Skills Programme, which was mainly working with children aged 5 to 11 and developing what is now the foundation phase and showing how important it is in the game. And that for me was an incredible time, because I never went to university. Back then the courses at uni weren't as good as what they are now for football coaching. So I decided to, you know, go fully into the coaching world, and being at the FA for 10 years was phenomenal, because we worked with some outstanding coaches, and the education that we got throughout that time was second to none, and some of the coaches have gone on to do some amazing things from that journey. But I remember our very first day at the FA Skills Programme. There were 66 of us, 66 coaches across the country, and we were invited to go down for our first day at Keele University. And we were sat in the auditorium, and Nick Levitt and some of the other staff were stood up at the front. One of the first things he said was, now, I know that you've all left your jobs and you've taken this new job and you've taken a bit of a risk because you actually don't know what the job is. Because none of us actually knew, because it was a brand new initiative, a brand new programme, something that hadn't been done before. And he said, I really appreciate you taking this lead, because you don't actually know what the job is. But our aim and our vision and our goal is, within the next 10 to 15 years, we want England to be successful at winning major tournaments. And lo and behold, we're sort of like 15 years down the line now, and we can see the fruits of the programme coming to fruition with, you know, the women winning the Euros. The 21s men's have obviously just had their massive success last week, and there's tons of success that they've had, but deeper than that, it's helped to shape the game as well, in terms of boys academies, and then also reshaping the girls game, which has been a fantastic development over the last sort of 10 to 15 years as well. So throughout my time working at the FA, I got the opportunity as well to work in the evenings in the Centre of Excellences, RTCs, I think they're now called ETCs, and I've done some work at Blackburn Rovers, where we had a bit of a golden generation, and that was my first experience working with some really talented players. I was really lucky to work with Kira Walsh for a number of years. She started in the FA Skills Programme with us over in Rochdale, and then I worked with her again for a number of years at Blackburn up until she left at 17 to go across to Man City. And we also worked with Georgia Stanway as well, who actually signed her at Blackburn when she came down from Barrow. And obviously those two have gone on to do some amazing achievements. And I was able to see how, you know, I'm able to use them now as an example and a model of what it takes to get to that elite level and that world-class level. I think we can put them both in that bracket at the moment because of the way that they're playing and the level that they're at. But that gave me a great foundation to my sort of club working alongside all the development stuff I was doing with the FA. And I moved across then to Man United, where they were really good at being at the forefront of new ideas in coaching. And I got a lot of experience at Man United of, like, we were introduced to futsal there and delving into how that supports the development of young players. We looked at our communication styles with players. We looked at deep into questioning, which I found really interesting. We also looked at some work around around half-time team talks and some blind coaching, which was done by a business developer, which was really interesting. And so those experiences over the time of being at the FA, being at Blackburn, being at Man United has really shaped my philosophy and how I coach today. Because then I've gone on to do a little bit of work with AFC Fylde Women's First Team, and then on to Liverpool Under-21s, which was my most recent role, where I was at for 2.5 years. That was a big development role, helping to develop the academy, which I've just stepped away from recently. But our last game was where we won the WSL Academy Play Final against Tottenham at the Loughborough Stadium, which was a great experience. And again, it was another stepping stone for me to be working with players that were on the first team pathway. And I think going forward now, it's just sort of, I look back quite a lot at where I've come from as a coach and the experiences I've got, where now I'm in a really good position where I understand who I am, what my philosophy is, who I like to work with, and how I like to work because of the journey that I've been on for over 20 years.
No, what a great answer. No, I've probably taken about 2 pages of notes already, just mentally, you know, thinking of different ways of, you know, we can take this conversation. But philosophy, you know, it was such a buzzword for a long time now, methodology, game model. Can you just kind of tell us what your philosophy is, or how you perceive to be football, you know, the way you want it to be played?
So, in terms of my philosophy, something that I've learned over the years, and it's sort of ingrained in me now, is to try and keep things simple. As coaches, we need to understand the game in great detail, whether that be looking at 1v1s, 2v2s, 3v3s with the foundation phase. We need to understand that in detail, but then we get it over to the players in its simplest form. And whether we're working with players in the 11v11 game, again, we've got to understand it in its most complex form and understand it in real detail, but then share that information or whatever it is we're trying to get across to the players as part of the game model. We've got to share that with them in its most simplest form. So I think that the thing that underpins my philosophy is around space. So if you're attacking, it's looking at where is the space, how are we going to create the space, and then how are we going to attack the space. And then from there, you can look at how we manipulate players to move, how we move the ball into the space, how we get the players into that space, and then how we progress from that space into the next space. It's all around manipulating space and then flipping that so that when you're out of possession, it's around reducing the space. And whether that's with a high press, you're reducing it, playing out for the keeper. Whether you're in a mid-block, you're trying to reduce the space between the lines. Whether you're in a low block, you're trying to reduce the space that's in behind. So in its simplest form, it's around either creating as much space as we can and identifying how to attack through it, or reducing the space and stopping the opposition attacking through it.
Yeah, because that's the when we look at like playing against teams that are maybe have like a low block or a medium block or even a high, and you need to learn how to, you know, obviously when you've had many years experience working with different players to, you know, manipulate the space to basically make sure that they understand that there is going to be difficulties, you know, using maybe some constraints. But there's a lot of good coaches out there that, as you say, make it so simple. Why do you think that we struggle to make it simple for the players when sometimes they just want some simplicity? You know, that maybe come from a kind of foundation level to a youth level. You know, I'm just wondering, do you think we try to make it all fancy and everything when sometimes the players just need just a bit of simpleness, you know, just to make sure it makes sense?
I think it comes down to the preparation. So if you put some context behind it, an example, you're in a training session. We've all been there in the past where we've had daytime jobs, and we're driving from here to there, and we're mad busy and we've not actually planned our session, and, you know, and it's half an hour before the session, you're thinking about it in the car and you're thinking, I could do this game, and you just arrive at training and you deliver. And that's when you find that the detail isn't as simple as what it should be, because you're getting caught up then in your own head, because you've not thought about it enough to be able to plan it in enough detail to then be able to explain it in its simplest form. And it's being caught out with stuff. You know, players love to ask questions, especially in the female game. They want to know why. Why am I doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? All the time. So you've got to be prepared for what ifs. What if a player asks this? What if a player asks this? What if this part of the session doesn't work? What if this part of the session doesn't work? What if it goes too well and I've really got to delve into it a lot deeper? And I remember being on my A license journey and a tutor coming in, and I did get caught out in some sessions because I hadn't thought deep enough around the game that they was playing. I like to do a lot of stuff around constraint-led, small-sided games, looking at the decision-making and allowing players to explore things within a game. And that's where you've really, really got to prepare for stuff and really think about different scenarios that might come up in the game and different situations, so that when they do come up, you're prepared with the answer, or you're prepared with the next progression or the regression maybe to change it or alter it in some sort of way to meet the requirements of the players. So it all comes down to preparation for me. And that's why I think some coaches do overcomplicate things.
Yeah, because that's what we talk about, like the best part of the coaching, the worst part. You know, like my favourite part when I'm coaching is seeing the, when you do a session and it breaks down maybe 3 or 4 times, but you know that in 6 weeks' time we can make the session just a little bit more simple, or just tweaking it, so therefore they understand it, that maybe the session is not the issue, or maybe not the place, just might be just the detail or the why behind the basically the session. But is that something that you, is that your kind of favourite part, kind of prepping, you know, organising on the pitch? And maybe what's the things that you might not like coaching? You know, is it the paperwork sometimes?
Yeah, I would definitely say my favourite part is the planning, and then taking that onto the pitch and delivering it and seeing it come to life. But I am a massive fan of planning. I have, as part of my philosophy and the part of the way that I do things, I like to always have my training sessions presented. So it could be on a PowerPoint presentation, or it could be on a sports session planner, for example, depending on whatever platform we're using at the club at the time. But having it pre-written out there, and then I share that with the players prior to the training session, so that they're aware of what the training session is, what they're coming into, what the expectations are, how it might flow, what the loading is of the session, and then so that they get on board pretty quickly with what I'm trying to do. And it's quite funny because with the last squad that I worked with, there's quite a few occasions that if there was either something on the session plan that didn't get delivered, or something that wasn't on the session plan that got delivered or didn't get delivered, the players would know, and they'd come up and say like, "Oh, Jenny, why are we not doing this?" or "Jenny, you put in the session plan this," because they like to know and they like to stick to that a little bit. I think there's a bit of a habit that comes in with it, especially if you're working to a periodised programme. The players get used to what the training sessions might be, how it might work, what the expectations are, and if it's slightly different, they know about it. And I think there's pros and cons to that, but I think definitely doing that by sharing it with the players is a big positive that I've learned over the last few years. I've seen it help the individual players, and then the squad with their understanding of what we want and how we try to play and how we try to work. And it's also quite good because it gives you a catalogue of the season, because some coaches also get caught up in always trying to come up with something new, trying to reinvent the wheel every single training session, when actually, if you just go back through your cycle of work, you'll go, we might be on, for example, finishing in the final third, and we might be on a match day minus one, and you might have a game that has worked really, really well. Just go back to that, because that's where you get loads of success. And then, again, going back to what we've just been talking about, delve into that in a bit more detail to layer it up. So you might have to get a few extra points in there in terms of development-wise, but planning around that, not just re-delivering the same session, actually layering it up again to help the development of the players. But don't reinvent the wheel, because a lot of it's, at the end of the day, it's football.
Yeah.
We're trying to put the ball in the goal. I'm just trying to find different ways of doing it and trying to stop the opposition doing it, but don't try and reinvent the wheel all the time. Sometimes just go back and have a catalogue of sessions that work really well, and that helps to frame your philosophy as well.
Yeah, because that's the thing, we talk about, you know, progressing as a coach, you know, like we want to progress ourselves, because we're always thinking, what's the next trend, what's the next, you know, but as sometimes is just not reinventing the wheel, just tweaking the session or making it better or making it more realistic. So you could maybe do something to do 2v2, but it could be to make it for the width, or it could be 2v2 as a, you know, a back four, but you're working in the centre backs, you know, totally different, but still kind of working with this kind of same players, but a different kind of, you want a different kind of way of thinking. But obviously you've worked in kind of youth and senior, but how do you progress yourself? You know, what do you do to make yourself that a little bit better? But then that kind of comes into the practical element. How do you try and put that into the kind of working with the youth and the kind of seniors to make sure that the things you've learned that they can maybe correspond or, you know, take, so therefore they can learn, you know, how you work a bit more?
I think some of the key times in my career so far that have helped my development is where I've asked other people for feedback and being honest about that. And I think it's something that's not done enough in football. We're quite closed off, I think, as coaches, and I think we should be a little bit more open to supporting each other and giving feedback. But you've got to build those relationships with the right people to be able to have that trust between you to then get that feedback. So I think along that journey, definitely filming yourself is one that I would encourage coaches to do. You could do it as simple as using two phones and having a microphone, or using one phone and using a dictaphone and just being mic'd up. And that's where you really see who you are as a coach, how you communicate, what your body language is like. You can record things like ball rolling time, and things will pop out that you're not aware of. And you'll just start to go like, gosh, did I really say that to a player? Or I missed an opportunity there where I could have really impacted somebody's development. Or going back to before where you talked about overcomplicating things, that's a good one to be able to listen back to your training session and think, I really struggled with that session when they were asking these questions and I was rambling about certain things. Go back and listen to it and learn from it, so that, because it will come up again, because it's part of how you coach, it'll come up again, that scenario, and you'll be much more prepared for it because you've gone through it. So definitely say filming and recording yourself is something that's vital, and I've spent some time over the years just doing that, just having a dictaphone in my pocket and just putting the microphone on my jacket. Nobody ever listens to it. Sometimes it's just me on the drive home from work just listening back to it and just thinking, did that situation really happen, or that was really good, was it as good as what I thought? And you get a different perspective on it. So definitely with that. And then the other one would be to offer your time. I think we live in a world now where we always want people to be paying us for our time, especially with the cost of living crisis and stuff. It is quite a difficult time. But to be able to open new doors, you've got to go and create those doors. And you've got to go and offer your time. And I remember I was very grateful when I went and worked at Fylde. I'd just got my A licence. I was working full-time in the day. I was working at Man United most evenings. But I didn't have any first-team experience on my CV. And I got an opportunity with Fylde to go in and coach with the first team, with the women, alongside two fantastic managers at the time. Really, really good. Created a really good environment. And I didn't get to go to all the games, but I went to one or two games so we could transfer what we'd done in training to and I could see it on match day, which was quite good. But I was only in there about 9 months and it was heavily interrupted by COVID as well. I wasn't paid. I had to do a little bit of travelling to get there. And it meant that I was working 5 days full time and 5 evenings with a family back at home as well. But that opened a door for me then to go into Liverpool when I applied for that job. And I think if I hadn't got that on my CV, that opportunity at Liverpool wouldn't have come up. So I'd encourage people to offer their time, whether that's going coaching for free, you know, one night a week, for example, whether that's going in shadowing people, whether it's just going in, having a coffee with somebody, offer your time because you don't know what doors will open from that. And being able to get certain things on your CV or certain things out on social media, making people aware that you go in networking, really does open up doors for you. Try not to be closed off to these opportunities. And if you can do it, I definitely take those little steps because it can make some massive steps happen for you on your journey.
No, I totally agree, because that's the, when I'm speaking to different coaches, you know, I always say, what can I do for you? So therefore, you know, it's like, you know, but then you look at the flip side is you look at the industry we're in, you know, and a lot of it is voluntary, but also there is people get paid and they get paid a good salary, but it's the middle ground, which is really difficult to try and judge, because you might have 20 years experience, but you still have to volunteer maybe once a week at a first time level to get that, you know, maybe do that 6 months of work, and then that person might say, do you know what, there's a part-time job going now, maybe we could try and get you, you've been in for 6 months, so I'm going to trust you instead of an external person, which sometimes is, can be a, you know, pro and a con. But I think we as coaches sometimes see when someone says, no, I don't have time for you, or you can't come in, we just go, all right, okay, no worries, and then it's give up very, you know, it's a pretty, because I think when we speak to people, we expect a pretty bog standard answer. No, sorry, can't come in because it's we've got this magic formula which somehow nobody knows about except the people around us. But the kind of, when I'm working in the kind of female game, you know, you talk about the why, which is really interesting, because I've been doing a lot of studying, you know, on the kind of why for myself, but also if you can become that better coach, so therefore you can explain things in more detail, then therefore, see, when it comes to being prepared, you're correct, you have to be ready in case there's a curveball question. But the four corner model, obviously, we look at the, you know, the technical side is a very, very big part of the kind of foundation phase, you know, and you obviously, you've done a lot of this when you're working in the skills centre. Is that something that you, what did you try and implement into the skills centre that helped the child become a better child, if that kind of makes sense? Because everyone wants to do the, you know, rondos and this and that. So what about TIG? What about things that are just going to make the kid enjoy the session? Is that something, then, of course, foundation to youth to senior, a lot of it is to do with the kind of technical and tactical part. Is that something you try to implement more on when you're trying to, when you're coaching, maybe when you're working with the younger ones?
Yeah, that was a really interesting time during my coaching career. And we tried many different ways of delivering sessions. We had a lot of research done. We looked at things like ball rolling time, questioning, communication styles. We looked at ways of how to engage with kids, looking at arrival activities, looking at type of matches that we played. And I think one of the structures that I took from it and still underpins part of my philosophy now is sort of having a structure where the session was an hour long and having it as like a whole part whole, because what the kids want to do is they want to play and they want to have freedom. So we'd always start off with a game and we'd let them have free play. And I think that's really, really important for a lot of the social side of the game and allowing kids to be kids and playing with kids, because But there's too many times when parents and adults and grown-ups and people that are in authority of kids lead the kids too much and therefore like control them, tell them what they can do, tell them what they can't do, tell them to be careful, don't do this, don't do that. But actually, they've got to work out for themselves what not to do before they learn what to do. And it's so much more powerful when it comes from the kid than from the adult. So, for example, if you've got, I use this analogy all the time when I'm speaking to coaches or even like some of my daughter's friends' parents. I say to them, like, imagine when, you know, you're climbing a tree, you fall out of the tree, you break your arm, and you go, not going to do that again. Next time I climb up that tree, I'm not going to put my foot there. I'm not going to put my hand there. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then you go back on and you climb up again and you're successful. And it's like that with everything that you do. So when those kids come into the skill centre or they come into a football session, you know, allow them just to try and work it out for themselves, work out what team they're on, work out who's on their team, work out which goal they're playing in, work out how to get on the ball, work out that it's okay to take somebody on and no one's going to shout at you and shout pass. Work out how to go and score and watch them have massive smiles on their faces. Still be in and around to make sure the kids are safe, but a lot of free play is very, very important, I think, for kids because it helps them to become, you know, good, confident, independent people. Then we would go from that free play, we would then go into more of a structured session. So you'd go into your part practices, whatever the topic is for that day. You know, it might be going back to 1v1s, 2v2s and trying to beat opponents. So then you've got a bit more where the coaches are involved and we're showing and guiding them, giving them some clues and at times maybe giving them a bit of an answer. And then go back into the games at the end where it's free play. Might have some constraints on it now because we've worked on something in the session. But again, allowing them to go and explore without it being too much coach-led. Just take that step back, stand in between the pitches if you need to, keep an eye on them to make sure that they're safe, but allow the kids to go and try them, what they've learned. And I just always found that that was the best way for the foundation phase kids to learn and develop. You know, a child will come in off the first week and they might struggle to join in the first game because they might feel a little bit of social anxiety. You might need to get involved a little bit more, but over week two, week three, week four, they start to get used to it because it starts to become more familiar. You've got the same routine that's going on. So they take that little bit more of a step and a little bit more of a step and a little bit more confident. And then you start to see them trying things in these games. And that's when they start to flourish for me. So definitely being brave to have a little bit more free play for kids and not being so much controlled over by the adults.
Yeah, that's really interesting because obviously when we talk about, you know, working in the foundation phase, you need to be a specialist sometimes, but there's also specialists who work between the foundation and the kind of youth, you know, so you've got, you know, many years experience in that, but you probably have to maybe watch other sessions or speak to other coaches that have that kind of the kind of transition, you know, kind of stage. How did you try and, you know, develop that, you know, relationship with the players, but also working on that mindset of these players are starting to get older, so therefore we have to maybe stretch them or, you know, push them to make them into maybe a kind of into a national team or maybe into the kind of World Cup, which we'll discuss after this.
Yeah, so I think that as the players progress through the different phases of the game, they definitely become more complex because they're becoming, you know, young adults, and that's where a lot of complexity comes in. So first of all, you've got to try and get to know them as a person and try and understand, you know, what type of person they are, what motivates them, you know, try and recognise when they're happy, try and recognise when they're not quite the usual self. Try and understand, one of the big ones for me is how to coach them, because some players genuinely don't like being coached. Some players absolutely love it and are happy for you to step in. So trying to work on different coaching styles to still develop those players is really important. So that would be the first thing. And then the second thing would be around, like, what I look at as is layering up your coaching. So having different layers. We talked before around keeping the game simple, whether it's 2v2s or whether it's the 11v11 game. Look at it in that format. We need to know the complexity of it, but the players need to know it in the simplest form. But at the same time, you've got to understand the different layers that's required. So when you're stepping in, recognising that you can still do a 2v2 with a five-year-old, and you can still do a 2v2 with a player that's on the first team pathway. But the bits of detail that are in there will be slightly different. We could still talk about space. We could still talk about moving the opposition. Still talk about skill, but you might just utilise it in a different way. You might ask questions, whereas you might ask a little bit more of a complex question with a player. And you also might, with the older players, you might do some stuff off the pitch and look at some game footage. You might look at some analysis of a previous game that's linked to a previous training session leading into this week's training session, so everything kind of links, and try to share with them where they're at on their individual journey, how they're developing, and what things they need to think about. You won't do that with the younger ones, but it's the same. It's still the same game. So it's for me, it's understanding that it's not. Don't go too far away from the game just because players are getting older or players are younger, for example, because it happens both ways. And then the other thing I would say is, that was required to stretch players, is to try and get them to understand where they're at on their journey, and that we're going to take them out of the comfort zone a little bit. So they might play up an age group, or they might train up an age group to have a slightly different challenge. They might be paired up with someone that's slightly bigger. There's loads of different ways that you can do that. There's loads of different ways to stretch players, even just going watching the next age group and getting them to identify what's different in these training sessions, or what's different about the coaching at this level, what the expectations at this level. That they can be really big eye-openers for players, because if they don't see it, they don't know what they're trying to achieve or what they're trying to work towards or what the expectations are for them to get that next registration in the next age group, for example, for the next season. They need to understand what is required of them and then where they're at on that development. And that can come down to the IDP reports as well. So the one-to-one reports that the players have throughout the season. You've got to be really honest with players around where they're at on their development journey, so that at the end of the season, either way, it doesn't come as a surprise. They're fully aware of where they're at, and that they understand that they're in control of their own development. And that our job is just to give them opportunities to help stretch them and challenge them. And just give them a little bit of guidance towards what's coming next.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you see the challenges now. Like a lot of the younger players are actually playing at a World Cup, you know, or a European Championships. And a lot of these kind of the countries, there's always the older generation and the younger generation. There's the middle one is very hard to kind of judge sometimes, because they're the ones who maybe might struggle a little bit because they maybe get nervous or not so nervous. But it's actually the younger ones, you know. You talked about the specialists, you know, you've got the national team coaches, but obviously we've got the World Cup happening very soon in Australia and New Zealand. Who do you think is going to do well, maybe struggle? And what do you think, maybe what trend is going to happen? Because you usually see maybe some set plays, or, you know, 2v1s, 3v2s, you know. Or even, I think, I'm probably guessing that your philosophy is a lot to do with space, so you probably look into that kind of, you know, way of thinking. So what do you think is going to happen, you know, in this period?
I'm really looking forward to the World Cup, if I'm honest with you, because there's a lot of question marks going into the tournament. A lot of question marks around, are the teams as good as what they've been previously? because there's been a lot of change. There's a lot of stuff going on in many of the teams off the pitch as well. So there's a lot of question marks. And I think it's a bit of an open tournament, if I'm honest with you. I think there's some fantastic teams that are still in there. You know, you've got your likes of Germany, USA, France, England, Spain, you know, Holland, I think, could be up there as well with a shout. But I couldn't really tell you who I definitely think would win because there's so much stuff going off the pitch. If I had to pick one team, I think Germany might pip it because I think they're a little bit more settled than some of the other teams. I think England, I think I'll be really, really pleased if we get to the semi-finals. I don't think we've got enough to win it because we've obviously got all the injuries, the unfortunate situations that have gone on with some players has been... It's been quite sad to see, but and they were very, very important players to the squad. But I think for England, this tournament, if we can get to the semi-finals, have a real strong, solid tournament, that will then push us on again then for the Euros that will be coming up. And I think then you add back in the players that are unfortunately not available for this tournament, plus the experience that the younger, inexperienced are going to be getting at inexperienced players are going to be getting at this tournament. I think putting that together with Serena's philosophy and winning mentality, I think we could come back even stronger in the future. But I think Germany will be really, really strong in this tournament. But there's a few teams, I think, that it depends where they finish in the tables and what route that they've got to the final. I think there'll be some surprises. And yeah, I think there'll be some surprises in terms of, I think one or two big guns might go out in the group stages as well. It's a bit open. I don't think it's as straightforward group stages as what you get in the men's World Cup, which I think is what makes it more exciting for the women's game because it's just developing all the time. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think the things that I'm going to look for most in the tournament is looking at game models and looking at patterns of play. It's something that I've been learning a lot over the last few seasons, something that's been new to me. And I've developed my own philosophy around certain principles of play. So I'm going to be looking at it through that kind of lens, I think, for this tournament, trying to recognise how some of these developing teams are trying to play, particularly trying to play out from the back. And as we were talking about before, how they create the space, how they move opponents to try and then move the ball into certain spaces to attack, to see if I can see anything a little bit different, get some different ideas. And then I think something that's a common trend across all different tournaments on the world stage is set pieces. Over recent tournaments, there's been some interesting set pieces, and in the Women's Euros, set pieces was a very important statistic of the game, something that's increased in terms of effectiveness in the game over the last sort of 10 years. It's really increased, so I'll be interested to see if there's any different styles that come out in this tournament as well, and again, different ideas that will then roll over into club football.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You talk about club football, you know, and kind of international football, and you see a lot of the trends is back four, a lot of it, you know, and maybe I love playing a back three, maybe because I just am more attack, you know, I love to have that extra defender in midfield, so therefore you can have two more attackers, and therefore you'd be potentially with 3-4-3 or 3-5-2, whatever. But this is a really thing I've been studying for a long time in the women's game, and it seems to be a lot of it is back four to make sure that there's a solid defence, and then it's the transition, you know, from the space, as you say, in behind. Do you think there's going to be a big surprise in formations, or do you think it's going to be, let me rephrase the question, because I know there's a couple of teams that might struggle, you know, like get a maybe 6 or 7 or 8, you know, get past them just because they're not as advanced, you know, or developed. But do you think some the stronger teams might play a different kind of system against a weaker team per se, so therefore they might get, you know, more game time for these players, and therefore that player who might be on the fringe might actually be the what they're looking for, that kind of spark. It's just, I was just wondering, is that something you've kind of seen from your experience?
As the women's game's been developing over the last couple of seasons, there's definitely been an upward trend in the flexibility of tactics in the women's game. And I think that, like you've just alluded to there, around the teams recognising who they're up against, so what their opponent's threats are and what their weaknesses are, and then setting up to exploit them. And I think if we take England, for example, you know, Serena's got some different formations depending on who we're playing against, but then also some different tactical ideas. And that was one of the big successes from the Euros in terms of the use of substitutions to affect the tactics that the team were playing on. They had some real good depth. So I think we'll see in this tournament, I think we'll see teams setting out in a set formation that they would prefer, but then there'll be a lot of flexibility depending on how the game's going. And I think managers now are, I think there's some excellent managers going to this World Cup with some excellent knowledge and experience. And we'll see that really coming out, where there'll be some challenges thrown at opposition, especially as you go into the latter stages of the tournament. And I think we might see one or two surprises in terms of individual players being highlighted for their effectiveness, maybe coming off the bench, or vice versa, if unfortunately an important player to a team gets injured, how teams will adapt around that. I think we'll see some really interesting flexibility to the tactics, but the managers going into the tournament are, there's some really, really good managers, so there'll be a lot to learn, and it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, and that becomes obviously to do with mindset, you know, and obviously we've talked for 40 minutes, you know, about kind of different types of mindset. What does the kind of mindset mean to you, and how would you try and maybe define it from the coaching, but also a personal one? Because everyone tries to have two hats when they have their personal life and they've got a professional life, but sometimes they combine them both and actually makes the job easier in a way, because you can have that skill, you know, working with the human relation, you know, at home, but also working with the, you know, the players that you're working with.
I think I've been really fortunate over my coaching career to work with some fantastic players that have gone on to play on the world stage, and actually using them as a model for what it takes to reach that top level. Mindset is massive in terms of that model. I've seen some fantastic technical players with some great skill, but they've just not got the right attitude and that right, they've not got the right commitment to the game. So mindset for me is massive. And I think that, you know, I think, is it Pep Guardiola that says the quote around, it's talent that gets you into the room, but it's your attitude that takes you as far as you can go. And it is so true. You've got to be open-minded when you go into football. You've got to be open-minded to learn. I mean, when I was younger, I was very closed off. I thought I knew everything when I was a teenager, and I clearly didn't. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't go to university. And now I'm very, very much into learning, reading, just every day trying to learn something new. It feels like an achievement. It feels like I've underachieved if I've not learned something new every day. And it's that kind of attitude that footballers need to have. They need to come into every single training session with an attitude that they can take something from that training session. You don't want to be just going into a training session and going through the motions. That's a really, really dangerous place to be in. So as coaches, again, we've got to understand our players as people and understand what motivates them and recognise when they're their good usual self, but also understand and recognise when they're not the usual self, and then work out how to try and support them, because that's when it can be really, really dangerous. So you've got to look at how to motivate the players, because ultimately if their mindset starts to drift the wrong side, their decision making will be affected. And that's then the difference between players that make it and players that don't. And that means decision making, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch. You know, as I said, I've seen some fantastic players, but they haven't quite made it to the top level because of their decisions off the pitch. So I mean, like things like how they look after themselves, how they prepare for training, how they sleep, we talked there about their work life and how to balance things out, how they manage setbacks. So, for example, if for a reason they find themselves on the bench, how they respond to that. And that's their decision. And with every decision that someone makes, there's a consequence. And that consequence could be really good, or it could have a negative impact. You could have a player that's on the bench who, they're frustrated, they're upset, but they stay very professional about it, they understand it, and then they follow the process of speaking professionally with management at the specified time that's been given. And that's, for me, that's usually after game day, and doing it very professionally, even though they're frustrated. Or you could have the player that struggles with the mindset, struggles with attitude, who's on the bench, and it becomes really a negative attitude, and again, that's their decision, and that has a negative impact then on the team, has a negative impact on their performance, and it has a negative impact on them going forward. So when players are going through foundation phase, youth development phase, coaches really do need to hone in and not let players just go through the motions with training. We've really got to help them to understand how to deal with setback and how to deal with challenges and uncomfortable situations, so that as they go through youth development into professional development phase and then into first team, and they are faced with setbacks and challenges, they know how to professionally deal with it, and they know how to professionally progress with that. And for me, that was the difference between some of these players that have made it at the top level. I mean, I could talk about Kira and Georgia and the challenges that they faced, but they never let it get in their way because they had a great mindset. They were so determined, and they pushed through every challenge that was put in front of them. And it's something that I admire about these players that have gone on to the top level, because not everybody has a fantastic mindset. It's something that we can work at, it's something that we can learn and we can develop, and you've got to be open to understanding that, but as coaches we've got a vital role to play in developing players' mindset.
Oh, this has been fantastic, thank you again for the insight, Jenny. It's, I could talk around 3 hours about this, but no, thank you again for chatting to me.
It's been my pleasure, I've really enjoyed it, thank you for inviting me on.